From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, proponents of raising taxes on New York's wealthiest cite the continued bad news from Washington about deep federal cuts to health care and other areas. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on that, and former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara's new job, and New York's lieutenant governor makes a clean energy announcement. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. A provision to shift Medicaid health care costs in New York from counties to the state as part of the repeal and replacement of Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, by Congress is meeting with a cool reception from state leaders. Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo calls it a targeted war on New York, while the leader of the Republicans in the legislature is voicing skepticism. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
An amendment to the health care plan in the Republican-led Congress would free counties in New York from having to pay for Medicaid health care costs. But the difference of around $2.3 billion a year would have to be picked up by the state without any additional federal aid. Two upstate New York congressmen, Buffalo's Chris Collins and the Hudson Valley's John Faso, are backing the proposal. It was created by Speaker Paul Ryan and other congressional leaders as a sweetener to gain their support for the measure. Governor Cuomo says the move is a cost shift and just adds to the estimated $4.6 billion burden the state already faces if GOP members of Congress follow through with the plan to eventually trim Medicaid payments to states. New York took advantage of options under Obamacare to expand health care coverage, so stands to lose even more than most other states.
My greatest fear from last year's election has actually come true, which is you would have a rabid conservative ideology in Washington that would tell New York to drop dead.
Cuomo says the federal aid losses will ripple through the healthcare system and devastate one of the state's top industries, with damage far beyond the loss of healthcare coverage for the state's poorest residents.
That means more hospitals, more nursing homes are going to close. That's what that means. There is no ferry that is going to float down and hand over $2.3 billion to make up the shortfall that the counties left.
Cuomo was joined by the heads of the state's largest hospital associations, as well as the leader of the healthcare workers union, SEIU 1199. He called out Congressman Faso and Collins, saying they were putting ideological zealotry over service to their constituents, who Cuomo says will be hurt by the cuts. The governor also blamed Speaker Ryan, calling him a rabid conservative. Cuomo did not name President Trump, who is championing the healthcare changes. Even the highest-ranking Republican in state government, GOP Senate leader John Flanagan, is skeptical. Flanagan says without additional monies, New York's taxpayers will have to finance the Medicaid costs one way or the other, so it won't be true relief from state mandates that many Republican senators have sought in the past.
Mandate relief is supposed to turn into taxpayer relief. So if it's mandate relief and nothing happens to the taxpayer at the end of the day and they're still bearing the same burden, then I'm not sure I would agree that it's mandate relief.
The proposal leaves New York's counties in an awkward political position. New York State Association of Counties Executive Director Steve Aquario says his group is opposed to the current form of the Obamacare repeal and replacement, believing it will be detrimental to health care in New York State. But he says a state takeover of Medicaid, which the counties have been asking for 51 years, could be a silver lining in an otherwise abysmal bill.
Back in 1966, NYSAC and the counties of this state told the state it was the wrong policy for the taxpayers, that it would come back to haunt them.
He says New York is an outlier and one of the only states that require a local government contribution to Medicaid. The Faso-Collins provision would end that. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, this week, Governor Andrew Cuomo, even New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, called for raising taxes on New Yorkers if the bill to replace Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act in the Republican-led Congress takes effect, which the governor says stands to hit the state with $7 billion in a loss.
David, the problem here is that New Yorkers are already among the most heavily taxed people in the country, and it is something that will cause tremendous amount of problems for taxpayers and for individual citizens who just can't go again on this. The governor is saying, okay, if you're going to create this mess for us, then we're going to have to generate enough discussion, enough opposition from the people of New York so that you will feel the pain. You, President Trump, will feel the pain in this. The problem with that kind of a strategy is that this governor will look like he is taxing his people no matter what anybody says. And that is a position he doesn't want to be in. It's also true that this governor is spending a lot of money. He's rebuilding airports. He's building bridges. One bridge, the Tappan Zee, where people don't even know where that money is coming from yet. And yet he does seem to have accumulated a certain amount of money to run with when he's running, as he's running for governor, as all governors do, for this third term. So he is playing with fire, and he's really furious at Trump. It's interesting that up until now, Schneiderman has been carrying a lot of the water with the anti-Trump movement. But now this governor has come out, and he's really come out swinging because he knows this could kill him.
Well, let's go to Schneiderman for a second. He's hired two prosecutors now to probe public corruption, including cases that could include President Trump. As you just indicated, a frequent Trump critic. Do these investigations continue, and do they have any weight?
Well, David, there are many people who think that President Trump is in real political trouble, as well as potentially criminal trouble, as it looks like many of the people who have surrounded him have had to do with the Russians. And the shoes keep falling. So if the shoes fall, there will be recrimination in the House of Representatives, in the Senate. And there are many people who think that the Russians are up to no good and they're bad people and that it will lead to Trump. It hasn't yet. It has led, at least in many people's minds, to people like Paul Manafort and others. Manafort, you will remember, was the chairman of the Trump campaign. So it does appear that Trump might be in some political trouble as those waters begin to boil. I am quite sure that there will be many levels of attack from some of the people in the country who have reason to oppose the president both politically and criminally. And the fact that Mr. Schneiderman is bringing on these people, all of whom have impeccable and tremendous credentials, indicates to me that there could be real trouble ahead here for Trump. And Schneiderman, of course, by being the guy who brings down the giant, would be the hero to many of the Democrats in blue state New York.
From Schneiderman to Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, another wedge against President Trump. But I see here, Alan, he's declined to take a position on the Medicaid amendment. At the center of that battle between Governor Cuomo and Representative Chris Collins, John Faso, Lee Stefanik in New York, and others, saying it's a distraction from the larger problem of the American Health Care Act, the Republican plan, of course, to replace Obamacare.
Well, Chuck Schumer, of course, is the wall between the Democrats and the Trump White House. He is the minority leader. He lacks several votes in order to do it. He knows there are real limitations on what he can and can't do. There are a couple of things here. Harry Reid's style was to really blast. Schumer's style is more moderate. This guy, who I've watched for years and years, and I know him and respect him and like him, has played a much more moderating role than one might have expected when he assumed the mantle of the head Democrat in the United States Senate. I think he thinks that you have to pick your fights and you have to know where you're going. And if you can win one, you win one, but you don't waste your ammunition. And in this case of New York, and he's the New York senior senator, he knows that Cuomo is out there really hurt by these Trump moves. And I think he is loath to enter into too many fights. I also think, well, I hate to say it, but I don't know that those two guys have ever really gotten along that well.
Preet Bharara, now former U.S. attorney from the Southern District of New York, has a new job, Alan. According to Ken Lovett, Preet is going to be at NYU School of Law. Probably no surprise.
No, it's not. Look, Preet Bharara is an extraordinary man. He's done an extraordinary life so far, and he's a very young man. This is what we call in politics a parking place. Obviously, he's going places. But he needs a place to sit for a while, and they're making him a special scholar. It's not even clear whether he'll be teaching at NYU. But he will be available to students and others, and he'll probably do some law practice also to make some money, which people have to do. He is a guy who will be going places, I suspect, in politics, and it may well be that he wants to run for something against this present governor, for example, or the mayor, or others who offer tempting targets for him.
One of the other articles that was floating about a potential job for him earlier was getting a cable show to build his profile for a run.
Well, yes, that's a very interesting point, David, that you make. There's polling data that indicate that even though this guy has been bringing down politicians, Sheldon Silver in the Assembly, and the chief of the Senate, the majority leader, Dean Skelos, he is a guy who is still not known by a lot of people. So there has to be a way to do it. I don't think it makes an awful lot of sense to have a cable show unless he really has a prominent place, for example, on CNN as a commentator. But that doesn't always work. CNN can't afford to be a launching pad for a openly political person. So it is a tough place to be. If you go too low on cable, it looks shabby. So those are some of my thoughts on that.
Legislative Gazette political observer, Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Democratic U.S. Senator Charles Schumer has doubts about the viability of President Donald Trump's proposed budget. The Senate Minority Leader aired his thoughts on the budget plan recently in Saratoga County, New York. Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there.
Senator Chuck Schumer appeared outside a Clifton Park home to call attention to a suggestion made by newly confirmed U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. With the Jerrams, a young family of five, at his side, the Senate Minority Leader claimed a reduction in mortgage interest and state and local property tax deductions would hit homeowners in upstate New York, where there is a higher percentage of homeownership than downstate, particularly hard. But it wasn't long into his pitch when he was interrupted by five-year-old Jimmy Jerram.
Saratoga County, the residential home sale price was $273,000, so that's a lot of money. Very few people have enough to just have a down payment of $273,000. So people have significant mortgages.
Is Donald Trump going to take your money?
What?
Is Donald Trump going to take your money?
No, that's why I'm here. He said, is Donald Trump going to take our money? He knew. This kid has a future.
Just hours before the press conference, President Donald Trump released his plans for the federal budget. The budget outline calls for massive cuts to domestic programs in order to fund a $54 billion increase in defense spending, the construction of a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, and a boost to homeland security. The Senate Minority Leader expressed doubts that the budget would get very far in Congress.
The bad news is the budget the president proposed. The good news is both Democrats and Republicans are saying they're not going to pass it, and I'm one of those.
In fact, the two congressional representatives who serve Saratoga County, Democrat Paul Tonko and Republican Elise Stefanik, while differing in tone, both issued statements against the proposal and its cuts to individual programs. Schumer criticized Trump's plan to cut funding for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency by a third.
There are many small communities here in the Capital Region that need new water and sewer. And there are grants that come out of EPA that help to fund it. What are they going to do?
He spoke out against cuts to medical research through the National Institutes of Health.
Terrible. We're one of the centers of medical research here in the Capital Region. you know, at University of Albany and so many of our other schools. They cut science the same way, so it would affect RPI and all the engineering stuff we do up here.
Broad cuts to departments like education, transportation, agriculture, and cuts to programs like LIHEAP, which provides home heating assistance to low-income households. Schumer claimed the cuts go too far. He did say there is room to increase spending on defense without gutting important domestic programs.
We've had a watchword that it should be there should be parity. So instead of $54 billion in military increase, you could do 20 or 30 and do the same on the domestic side.
The Democrat also took time to cast doubt on the Republican plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. He acknowledged Obamacare needs fixing, but slammed the so-called American Health Care Act's cuts to Medicaid.
This has loads of problems, and that's why it's not getting a great reception from Democrats and Republicans alike.
For his part, President Trump tweeted that, quote, a budget that puts America first must make safety its number one priority. Without safety, there can be no prosperity, unquote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
New York's Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul made a stop in Albany this week to make a clean energy announcement. Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
At the gleaming new Albany Convention Center, Hochul announced an effort to incentivize New Yorkers to avail themselves of a technology involving clean energy that's been in use more than a century.
We've had electric vehicles in the state of New York for 115 years. They started in Buffalo in 1902. And the reason they started electric vehicles is that women had difficulty operating the crank. So some ingenious person at Buffalo Electric Motor Company came up with the idea that we could do it with electricity. And what a great idea. So women, even before they had the right to vote in the state of New York or in this country, had the freedom to be able to travel around their community with an electric vehicle back in 1902.
Hochul outlined New York's first electric car rebate and outreach program.
It's a $70 million total investment that'll build on the state's efforts to reduce carbon emissions while encouraging the use of electric cars statewide. We're going to be dedicating $55 million for rebates up to $2,000 per vehicle for the purchase of cars. An additional $15 million will be allocated toward the installation of new charging stations all across New York, as well as consumer education and awareness.
New York already has 1,600 charging stations. Hochul says the state will have more than 3,000 by year's end. Hochul says, considering climate change, we have a responsibility to protect future generations, so electric vehicles make sense. Hochul indicated she'd like to see more built in the state. Chairman of Energy and Finance for New York and chair of the NYSERDA board, Richard Kaufman, says New York is leading the transition to a clean energy economy, and the electric car rebate program will play a key role. As of today, more than 30 different types of electric cars are eligible for rebates.
The longer the car can travel on one full charge, the higher the rebate will be, ensuring that incentives are directed to those cars that can best help us meet our emissions reduction goals. Vehicles getting less than 20 e-miles from one full charge will receive a rebate of $500. Vehicles averaging between 20 and 40 electric miles will get a rebate of $1,100, and vehicles averaging between 40 and 120 e-miles will receive a $1,700 rebate, and cars ranging upwards of 120 e-miles from a full charge will receive a $2,000 rebate. Vehicles that retail for over $60,000 will receive a maximum rebate of $500 regardless of their range.
Lou Roberti has been an auto dealer in New York State for over 30 years.
I never thought we'd see electric cars come to where they have today. I'm like completely shocked and utterly, I'm so happy with the whole program. Now, the governor with New York State giving us up to $2,000, you can take a vehicle like a Bolt. That's $37,000. Take a $2,000 rebate. If you can get a $7,500 federal grant, you bring the car under $30,000. 238 miles on a single charge.
New York League of Conservation Voters President Marcia Bistron says New York has improved its carbon footprint and that EVs create a tremendous opportunity to advance public-private partnerships.
The launch of the EV rebate program is another step towards the statewide effort to reduce CO2 emissions in the transportation sector.
Officials say the rebate program should accelerate sales while protecting the environment, as well as raising awareness of climate change and new technologies serving mobility. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Canada's Consul General in New York spoke to a crowd of Northern New York officials in Plattsburgh, where the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley picks up the story.
Consul General Phyllis Yaffe delivered the annual Distinguished Canadian Address, sponsored by the Development Corporation and SUNY Plattsburgh's Center for the Study of Canada and Institute on Quebec Studies. Development Corporation President and CEO Paul Grasso says they have sponsored the Consul General's visit for years.
We have so many Canadian companies here. The trade relationship is so important that to bring people of Phyllis Yaffe's stature down here to talk about the relationship is important for the entire community, not just the business community, but the entire community. It helps us to understand better the mentality in Quebec and in Canada, and also helps us to formulate our message a little bit better if we understand from their perspective how they're perceiving activities in the United States.
Yaffe, who was appointed to her position in July 2016, spoke about the shared values between the U.S. and Canada. She noted that trade is a key pillar of the partnership.
Today, Canada-U.S. free trade, framed within NAFTA, accounts for more than 100 Canadian-based companies in this area, employing more than 2,500 people from the North Country. Overall, more than 17,000 jobs in the North Country region depend on trade with Canada. Exports from this region to Canada totaled $626 million in 2015.
Yaffe reported that bilateral trade between the two countries in 2015 reached $671 billion. That represents $2 billion in goods and services crossing the border daily. Trade between Canada and New York totaled $30.3 billion in 2016, supporting 680,000 jobs. But she expressed concerns over the state Buy America proposal.
In many ways, we really are one economy. This is why forced localization efforts, such as the Buy America proposal currently being pursued in New York State's budget, has the potential to greatly inhibit our robust and mutually beneficial relationship.
After speaking for about 15 minutes, Yaffe took questions from the crowd. She was asked about widely publicized images of refugees from America crossing into Canada from a rural road in northern New York.
Although there are people using that approach to entering Canada, it is not the issue that lots of people would like us to think. There are very clear rules about how one enters Canada, and the laws are being applied as rigorously as they ever were. And we are absolutely concerned that every single person who enters Canada is scrutinized.
Canada is celebrating its 150th year of Confederation in 2017.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1712 or just podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.